Alexander Snitker, libertarian, Republican, and political hack. And Adrian Wiley, born-again anarchist and political has-been. Banter, lather, and joke about current events while attempting to figure out whether to keep trying to salvage our constitutional republic or just stock up on marshmallows to roast on the smoldering embers of society. It's time for Unattended Baggage.
Why, thank you, Scott. Hello, everyone in Podcastville or Internet Land or wherever you may reside. This is Alex, co-host, Unattended Baggage. Along with me is my radio life mate, the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Adrian, insert insult here, Wiley. How are you doing, sir?
Well, I like that much better than, you know, a scallywag or, you know, whatever you were calling me, whatever 17th century, insults you had for me.
You know what's funny is I had all this other stuff that I had to get done that I wanted to make sure I was done with today.
Right.
But the problem was is that I didn't go and look at the top part where I had to put in the new insults.
Oh, wait a second. You were actually reading that, is what you're saying.
Oh, yeah. No, I did. I said insult here. So I mean, I did it on purpose.
On the show note, it was insult. Well, yeah, insult here.
No. I just put that in the show notes.
That's classic. Yeah. Yeah. Well, just about anyone works. So I am a man of many digressions. So, that's not the word I'm looking for.
Constant sorrow?
That too. Yeah.
But you're a proud papa today is what you are.
I am. A shout out to my son, Connor, who graduated from St. Pete College Fire Academy yesterday. So he is now an official firefighter and EMT. Looking for work, by the way. So if any of you out there is a firefighter in the greater Tampa Bay area and needs a new probie or recruit or whatever the hell, reach out to me on Facebook or something. I'll send my son your way. He's a big guy, too. He's, you know, like 6'1", 250. He can, you know, carry all kinds of fat people and stuff like that. So
hold on a second here. Let me ask you a question. So they don't automatically have jobs?
No. No, you got to go through the hiring process. You got to go apply for jobs. Yeah. So
really,
yeah, it's not like some states where, you know, you automatically come out, because here's what's happening. Like what we're finding out now is, like, say the, you know, Pasco County is hiring, or the city of Gulfport is hiring, or, you know, the city of Tampa or something like that. You know, it really depends. And it's also a long cycle. So because he's both an EMT and a firefighter, if he can't get a firefighting job, because they say a lot of times the hiring process takes like 6 months to get hired with a fire department.
Wow.
But he could work for like one of the ambulance companies, like Sunstar, for example.
Okay.
So he could be an EMT while he's interviewing with fire departments and trying to go through that process. But no, it's actually you got to go through the hiring process. So.
Wow. What are firefighters, like, what's the pay start at?
I think it starts at 40. For like the basic entry level, but probably your average firefighter is probably making 60 or 70, because there's a lot of overtime. And as it, like, for example, once you get you go through paramedic school and become a fire paramedic, that's a higher level. Right now he's like at the lowest entry level is a fire EMT.
Yeah.
You know, and there's different types of firefighting. I mean, there's hazmat, there's woodland. Like, he could, right now he has a certification where he could go anywhere in the country and be a, fight forest fires, wildfires, stuff like that. You know, in fact, there's even like a gig to go be a firefighter in Antarctica for 6 months, and they pay you like $120,000 for 6 months.
Is he thinking about trying to do that?
I told him, shit, yeah, go to Antarctica.
Oh, you should totally.
What an experience that would be. Yeah, that would be awesome.
No, did you just say Antarctica?
Yes.
Like, so the southern one.
Yeah.
Like the one that is its own continent. Yeah. Wow.
Okay, what you're confusing is
the Arctic.
The Arctic Circle or the Arctic Sea.
Yeah, with
which
Antarctica.
Is the north one. But Antarctica, ant, opposite, Arctic, yeah. Other side. Yeah, that's the south one.
Wow, I hope he does that.
Well, yeah, because
I really do.
They've actually got a city there, essentially, with, you know, during the summer there's like 10,000 people there, so they actually need a fire department and everything like that. So
wow.
Yeah.
God, and I hope he does that.
I'm sure that there's a whole lot of people that actually want to go do that. But, well,
not
maybe
as many
not.
As you think.
Yeah, maybe not, because they pay so much, you know.
Yeah,
so
yeah, if everybody wanted to do it, they just pay 60. Yeah,
exactly.
maybe more people want to do it because they're charging more money.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If they're paying that much, chances are it's because they really need to entice people to do it. I mean, it would be boring as hell, but it would also be interesting. I'd love to do that.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it just wouldn't a life experience that would be.
Oh yeah. No, yeah. It was like when I was in the Marine Corps, man, we did a 6-month float. Like, that was awesome just to be able to kind of go around and do
And you
that
did the med, right?
I did a med float. Yeah, I did the med float.
So you got to go to Italy and Greece and stuff like that.
I spent like a month with it on an Italian ship while I was doing it.
Right, yeah.
On the Garibaldi.
Yeah.
You know, that was awesome. That was a good time. I actually spent a month in Israel, too, when I was over there.
Yeah, yeah. So do you think the Italians can actually fight?
They can eat. They serve good food on it
because Italy doesn't have that great a combat record. So I wonder, like, being on a Italian combat ship, do you feel like, oh, this is a battle ready vessel, or like, hey, we come, we love?
Oh, no, my friend, no, it's not possible. It's not possible, my friend. They would say that to me all the time. Right. It was constant. Every time I tried it, when we want to do something, it was, oh no, my friend, it's not possible. And the thing was this: like, when they sent us over there, my unit that I belonged to thought that they were sending me on some kind of like real crap detail.
Right.
And literally it was like all corporals and it was like all corporals and lance corporals and, or was I a sergeant at the time? Maybe it was corporals, lance corporals, I think, and one lieutenant. We never saw him.
Right.
And we would get, basically we had radio watch 4 hours on, like 48 hours off.
Like, wow.
And the rest of the time, and they let us drink in the Berthon area. You could smoke cigarettes in the Berthon area. The food was always good. Like, it was, I mean,
that
was,
sounds like a cruise.
It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. I had a good time.
So anyway, shout out, congrats, Connor. Proud of you, son. And good luck finding a job quick.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
But I'm sure he will, though. I mean,
I think he will. I mean, it's like the interesting thing is, there's a lot of involvement with actual fire captains and stuff in the school. So the instructors are all like guys who are fire captains for local departments and stuff like that. And, you know, so they all know you, and it's a very obviously tight knit group. So really the secret is just getting to know people, and he's made some great connections with people, and he's a likable guy. So I think he'll have no problem.
Good. Good. Yeah. All right. No, it's awesome. And hopefully his first day at work goes better than the UPS driver's first day at work.
God, I can't tell you how much this story sickens me. For those of you who haven't heard by now or seen any of the details of the story, down in South Florida, there were two guys that robbed a jewelry store. And these two guys, they went in, I mean, dirtbag criminals, armed robbers, bad guys. Okay, so they go in, rob the jewelry store. They exchange gunfire with the owner. One of the employees at the jewelry store is injured. So, as they're trying to escape, these two armed robbers hijack a UPS truck with the driver inside. And the driver, from what I understand, it was his first day driving solo. He had just, brand new guy, just come off of training, first day driving solo. He has the bad luck of being hijacked by these two guys. So, of course, the police are involved. You've got, and there's a chase. So the UPS truck is trying to get away, you know, from these various police departments. You've got Miami-Dade involved. You've got Broward Sheriff's Office involved. You've got some other municipal departments involved. And they finally end up, the UPS truck finally ends up getting boxed in traffic at a Miramar, intersection in Miramar, Florida. Now, here's where everything goes south. The UPS truck with the two armed robbers inside and the UPS driver in between them stops in traffic. Now, they just stopped outright. They did not try to escape. They did not try to ram other cars or push their way through. They just stopped. It looked as if they were either going to give up or at least try to, you know, create a standoff situation, you know, maybe a hostage, you know, negotiation situation, whatever. Well, the law enforcement officers that were following them,
all
immediately dismounted and started moving on the UPS truck. Okay. Now they knew that there was a hostage inside. They were aware of that situation. So you would think that protocol would dictate that, you know, they would hold back, try to open communications, try to work to get the hostage safely out of that situation. Also, you have to understand that they were stopped in traffic at an intersection where a bunch of other vehicles and people inside their vehicles were surrounding this UPS truck.
Yeah, I mean, at this intersection, you're probably looking at about 25 to 30 cars
all around
this UPS truck.
And this is
not as much behind, but in front and on the side of.
Correct. Yeah,
it's all the cops are all behind them.
Exactly. So it's because basically behind them, everybody is pulled off the road.
Well, yeah, because I mean, there must be 20 cop cars behind them.
Exactly. So, you know, everybody is getting the hell out of the way when they see this caravan coming. But these people are stuck at a light, and this all came up from behind them.
Yeah.
Okay. And again, the UPS truck is not moving. It is stopped, and there's all kinds of vehicles around them. And there's a few vehicles behind them, too, but mostly are on the sides and in front. And it's like a three-lane, you know, with turn lanes. So there's probably like five lanes across. So the police begin to charge the truck. Instead of staying back, instead of trying to open communications, instead of trying to release the hostage, instead of trying to clear out all the civilians surrounding the truck, literally a ring of occupied vehicles surrounding the UPS truck, instead of trying to get them a safe distance, they just charge the truck. And it's hard to say who opened fire first. And I don't even think it matters who opened fire first. The police, of course, say that the criminals opened fire first. But from the video I've seen, you can't really tell one way or another.
You want me to play the video clip?
In a second. Okay. In a second. I want to set this up a little more. Now, the first problem I have is that instead of, you know, taking into consideration the safety of the hostage and the safety of the people around the hostage situation, they just charged up, you know, with, you know, assault rifles and
guns ablazing
and pistols and started open firing. But before they did that, they actually took cover behind vehicles occupied with civilians. They were using the people in traffic as literal, literal human shields. If you're taking cover behind an occupied vehicle, you are, by definition, putting civilians in the field of fire between you and your target. You are putting a civilian in between you. And in one case, the person driving an SUV sees that to their right was a UPS truck with criminals inside. And lining up on the left side of their car were three cops using him as cover. So the guy tries to push his way out of traffic because he realizes he is in a literal crossfire.
Yeah.
He is literally, there are bullets flying both directions. He's trying to get away. The cops are moving with the vehicle as he's trying to get away. So instead of realizing this civilian is trying to get out of the way of the gunfire that they've situation they've created, they're actually going to continue moving to use this vehicle as cover.
Yeah.
You know. So the end result is police killed both the suspects.
Mm-hmm.
Police killed the hostage. And police killed an innocent bystander at the other side of the intersection because they fired an estimated 200 rounds at this vehicle.
In the middle of traffic.
In the middle of traffic. Bullets hit several other vehicles. And it's actually shocking.
That not more people died.
More people didn't die. That more people weren't hit.
All right.
But now here, we're going to go ahead and play a clip. Now, I want to set this up first. This is a vehicle that is at the cross street. So they're actually sitting at a light at the intersection that's, you know, 90 degrees going the, so it's the cross street traffic. So they're probably, I'm going to say
100 feet away from the UPS.
More than, I'd say about 150 feet.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. About 150 feet from the UPS vehicle. And they're watching this unfold because they see the whole thing coming. So,
but we're playing this for the audio.
Yeah. We're playing this for the audio. This is two people inside a vehicle at the cross street at this intersection where this is about to go down. Go ahead.
Ends right now.
Okay, you can kill it.
Okay.
All right. So
that last one went right over their heads.
Several did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, but that last one, the one of the last ones sounded.
Oh yeah. If well yeah there were bullet holes in their car.
Yeah.
Okay. And the person that was killed was behind them. And the reason that is because they were essentially from the angle that police were firing at the UPS truck. They were the backstop.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, this is so egregious. And this is such a perfect example of the new mentality of police, that it is their lives. It's interesting. It's two things. The first thing is they always have to kill the bad guy. Period. They, no matter what, they use deadly force. They go to deadly force first and foremost. And the second is their lives are more important than anyone else. You know, there was a time in this country, maybe there was, maybe I'm being idealistic. Maybe there never was. I don't know. But in my idealistic view of the world, there was a time in America where a law enforcement officer really believed that their job was to protect and serve the public, and that if they had to lay down their life to protect and serve the public, they would do that. Now it seems it's gone completely the other way, that if you have to, if you're not sure, and if you think your life is in danger as an officer, you can kill whoever you want. You could shoot the dog. You can shoot the suspect's mom. You can shoot the guy who's, you know, doesn't have anything but a cell phone in his hand. But if you thought, hey, there might have been a chance that you were at risk, it's okay if you shoot him. And now apparently we've stepped that up to where if there's bad guys out there and you as a civilian have the misfortune of being at in the same place at the same time as the bad guys, you are fair game. Because one of the things that the I believe it was the head of the police union in Miami-Dade County said, was that, hey, you know, it's a shame that, you know, people lost their lives in this. But remember, the bad guys started it. It's all their fault. No, no, it's not their fault, because criminals, we don't hold to a higher standard. They are the bad guys. That's what we expect them to do. What we do not expect is you, who are supposed to be the good guys, to put civilians in harm's way and execute a hostage and be so negligent as to kill a civilian bystander. You knew without question that by firing 200 rounds into that vehicle, chances are you were going to kill the hostage. And you knew without question, unless you're a complete idiot, you knew that firing 200 rounds in a crowded traffic jam intersection was going to result in innocent casualties, and you didn't care. And let me tell you something else. The fact that if our troops had done the exact same thing, I mean the exact same scenario, you've got two terrorists with a civilian hostage surrounded by civilians. If U.S. troops had engaged in that situation in Iraq, in Afghanistan, in Syria, in any of the combat zones around the world, that would be a war crime. They would be on trial for war crimes, because that is a violation of Rule 6 of the Geneva Convention. You cannot engage an enemy if you know for a fact you are going to put civilians, there's going to be civilian casualties. In fact, the rules of war that the United States and 196 other nations have agreed to and ratified as a treaty say that soldiers in a war zone have to make every effort to clear civilians from the area before engaging the enemy. They have to make every effort. Their highest duty is to protect the lives of civilians and minimize civilian casualties. And police in America aren't even held to the same standards as soldiers in a combat zone. I haven't been this angry over something in a very, very long time, but this infuriates me to a point I can't even describe. And law enforcement, if you're listening, this is why America is turning against you. We see you for what you have become. And I know a lot of you guys personally, a lot of my friends are in law enforcement. I know you didn't sign up for this. You didn't sign up for this shit. Why are you letting them do this? Why are you letting them turn you into tax collectors, thinking that your life is more important than anyone else? You guys signed up to protect people. And now you've turned, you're worse. You're a greater threat to the public in so many cases than the criminals themselves.
Yeah.
You know, you have to turn back. You have to stop this bullshit because we are turning against you. The good people of America have had enough of it. And more, you know, I was talking about my son, a firefighter. You know, the fire departments across the United States, and this is a fact, have changed their uniforms. They no longer wear blue button-down shirts with a tie. They're going more and more to just gray t-shirts or, you know, like an off-color t-shirt.
Yeah.
Not even blue. The reason for that is because they are fearful that people will think they're police. And they're fearful of the retribution because it's happened. Because people have attacked firefighters who most people love because they mistook them for cops. There's a reason for that.
Why do you think this is happening? Like, what do you think the reason is that this is going down the way that it's going down?
It's training.
You think it has everything to do with training and mentality?
Training, mentality, and how they recruit. Those are the three issues. They recruit people who tend to want to just follow orders.
Well, yeah, because if you're too smart, they don't want you.
Yeah, and that's been proven. Yeah, actually, there was a federal court case.
Yeah, Kagan was involved with the Supreme Court case.
Right.
Sotomayor was one of the two.
And basically, a guy was not hired because he scored too high on the intelligence test. And he took it to court. He said, "How can you not hire me as a cop because I'm too smart?" And actually, it was held up in court that law enforcement agencies can say you're too smart to be a cop.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing. But I think the bigger problem is that somewhere along the line, the mindset got to be that America is a war zone, and that, you know, the police,
that us versus them mentality.
It's us versus them. That, yeah, every day, every stop is life and death, and every time you interact with a civilian, they could, you know, try to shoot you.
They could kill you.
When in reality, there's like 26 jobs that are more dangerous than law enforcement.
Yeah.
I mean, being an electrician and being in construction is more dangerous than law enforcement.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it's not true, one. But the fact that they beat it into these guys' heads that, you know, it's life and death every day. And your main purpose in life is to come home alive. You know, and so when that is beaten into your head, and when you're shooting at targets with like pregnant women pointing a gun at you and an old lady, you know, pointing a gun at you, you start to get into the mindset that everything is a threat and all that matters is your life, not the civilians. And when you do that, you end up running up to an occupied car to use it as cover. And you don't care if there's a family inside. You're going to use that car as cover, you know, to make sure that you kill the bad guy. And that's the other thing, is when you think that way and there is an actual threat, you know, if you perceive a threat, you're going to eliminate the threat.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, the rules...
If you're a hammer, everything's going to look like a nail.
Yeah, the rules of engagement for law enforcement is so much lower than for, you know, soldiers. Soldiers literally would be court-martialed for engaging in some of the situations that police do. Like, in this case in Miami is a prime example. I'm not being facetious at all. The rules of engagement... the international treaties, humanitarian laws, international humanitarian law, soldiers would be up on war crime charges for doing what the Miami-Dade Police Department did and various other police departments. There were five agencies, 19 different law enforcement fired, and they estimate about 200 rounds were fired.
Well, you know, the funny part about it is this is the same part of the country, though. This is the same, and again, I'm not trying to make this part of it by justifying what they did, but this is the same part of the country that Parkland was in,
right,
where you had the cop not go inside to go after a shooter, to not try to stop a shooter.
Right.
So the opposite of what you were looking at. I mean, not the opposite, because there's a lot of different things that there's a lot of differences between it. There's not a whole lot of parallels.
Well, no. There's not, though. I mean, think of it. Think of the difference here. In this case, we had, you know, like 50-on-2. The cops are going to engage.
Yeah.
In that case, it was 1-on-1.
That's
so
true.
When here's your mindset. I have to kill the bad guy, and I should probably protect those kids if I can. But my most important thing is making sure that I'm safe. Now, in those situations, and if you say you're in that situation, in that mindset, so the cop is going, there's a bad guy in there with a gun. I should protect the children, but my highest priority is protecting myself. What are you going to do? You're going to wait outside. Okay. Now, picture yourself in the Miami situation. You're a cop. I have to catch the bad guys. I should protect the hostage and the civilians around me, but my highest priority is to be safe. So my job is to kill the bad guy. My highest priority is to be safe. What do? Well, I hide behind cars full of people and shoot into the truck indiscriminately, knowing that I'm going to kill the hostage. Because that is what will keep me safe and still kill the bad guys. And in Parkland, you know, that was the thing. Okay. My safety is most important, so I'm not going to go in until I have a bunch of guys here.
Well,
that's it. They think that they are the most important, and you see it, man. You see it, and that is when you get in that mindset. That's when a cop says things to you like, "Hey, shut up! You do what I tell you to," because they think they are the most important people. Period.
Like they
believe it.
The part about protecting and serving the general public and that you work for the general
public
is all it's all gone. I mean, that mentality used to be around.
Well, and not only that, in the cases where it's been brought to court, and it's been brought to court on several instances, all the way to the Supreme Court has ruled that the police have no duty to protect civilians. And they know that as well.
Yeah.
You know, it's really police, law enforcement has become a revenue generating tool, and to maintain compliance with law. It's not about protecting and serving.
Code enforcement with a gun.
Yeah. Code enforcement with a gun. That's really what it is. Yeah. And indiscriminate use of that gun.
Yeah. It doesn't matter. And even if they, like you said, like the response was, well, they started it.
Right. And the thing is,
put out a couple, like 3 or 4 rounds. They did 200.
And the thing is, this is systemic. It's not only the cop out there in the squad car that thinks his life is most important and the public is a threat, and that protecting the public is like third or fourth down the list.
It's definitely not primary.
Yeah, it's through the sergeants, the lieutenants, the captains, the chiefs, the sheriffs, in a lot of cases, all the way up to the politicians. I mean, it's that's the mindset throughout. So when this sort of thing happens, the first move is everyone gets together, and that thin blue line gets a little bit thicker.
Yeah. Now, do you? I guess maybe the other question is, what blame do you put on the politicians for this? For making all these laws that these guys have to go out there and enforce.
Well, we know where I stand on this, but I put the blame squarely on the shoulders of the individuals.
The individuals
out there in the field.
Like if you actually are in this shootout and you started shooting,
yeah,
then the problem is with you.
You murdered someone.
Because that's what they did.
That's what they did.
Well, here's the thing. There's 4 people that got murdered. Right. 2 of them are justified murders.
Actually, in that situation, I don't know. They may or may not have been justified, but here's the thing. 2 of them did things to initiate a confrontation that was likely going to end up this way.
Because they got in a shootout with the jewelry owner.
I don't feel bad for the 2 criminals in this case. So let's not think that I'm, you know, defending these guys. Scumbags deserve whatever they got. Okay, what I'm saying is the way it went down with a total disregard for anyone else's safety.
Yeah.
I mean, zero regard.
That is on the police officer's responsibility.
That's totally on them. And not only, and here's the thing, not only was it a disregard, it was so heinous in the fact that they intentionally put civilians between themselves and the targets. They made civilians human shields. Period. End of story. They did that. It's indisputable by definition.
Yeah, by the yeah, but again,
if you're hiding behind a car with people inside of it, you are putting those people intentionally at the field of fire. You are not only shooting through them to get to your target. So picture yourself on a shooting range, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And you say, "I'm going to shoot at that target, but you folks stand about 10 feet down range as I do it."
Yeah.
I mean, that's just unimaginable. And then picture also on the other side of your target was more people that may or may not get hit by the bullets because, you know, there's nothing in between the target and them, you know? So you're shooting in between you and your target are civilians. On the other side of your target is civilians. And then not only that, your target is firing back at you. So you are intentionally, by positioning yourself there, drawing fire to civilians. I mean, it's like everything you could possibly do to harm civilians, you've done.
Yeah. And again, it was the total disregard for anybody's lives but their own.
Right.
Which, and again, look, I don't want to see police officers die.
No.
But at the same time, you took that job. Like, nobody asked you to take that job.
Here's what they should have done.
You took that job because you felt like a duty to protect the citizenry. Well, that doesn't mean, you know, that requires sacrifice.
Right. Right. Yeah. If you don't sincerely believe that you took a job where, if necessary, only if necessary, you would lay down your life to protect civilians, then you shouldn't be in that job.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, don't get me wrong.
I don't want to see cops die. I don't want to see that at all. I'm not saying anything like that. But if you're in a situation where there's a bad guy and you and a civilian,
you're there to protect the
civilian. Yeah, exactly.
You're there to protect a civilian.
That's your job.
That's what says, and if you're gonna have a government, and you're going to have police officers out there, then when people want to honor first responders or things like that, that's the reason that they're honoring them for. What they're not honoring them for is enforcing speeding tickets.
Right.
You know?
Right. You're not a hero just for being a cop. You're a hero for your actions. And I will say that those Miami cops that were involved in this are not only not heroes,
criminals.
They are criminal scumbags.
Like and you said that the FBI is investigating this though.
Right, right.
So we'll see what the FBI comes up with at this point though.
There may be a few people that lose their jobs over this, but I doubt there's going to be any prosecutions, and I'm confident that there will be no real substantive change in policy.
Okay, well, we'll see. I mean, you're probably right actually on that one. I guess it goes to mention next week, though, on the show, we are going to have one of our favorite former law enforcement officers on the show.
Yep.
John Beza, who's going to be coming in. And he recently wrote an article about how he survived 3 years as a libertarian cop.
Right.
Which is a great article, by the way. Well, I highly suggest that people
This was after 20 years as a NYPD detective.
Yeah. And now Beza actually was an undercover drug cop.
Right.
For a while. And has now since changed his mind on the whole drug war thing, but then spent years down here in Pasco as a libertarian cop. And reading the article, and when we get John in to talk about it, it really is telling as to what the focus is and what the focus isn't.
Well, and that's what I said. And this article that he wrote is phenomenal. I highly recommend you look it up. What's the title of the article?
How I Survived for 3 Years as a Libertarian Cop.
Yeah, folks, give that article a read. John Bay is a great guy. And you know, here's the thing. If more cops thought and acted the way John Beza does or did, it would repair the rift, that growing rift with the community right now. It would return a lot of the trust and respect that law enforcement has lost over the past couple of decades.
Because here's the thing. This is only the beginning. This is not the end.
Oh, no. It keeps getting worse.
It's only getting worse and worse and worse, which is why you're seeing such this. It's also why you're seeing such a push for the honor and responding the first responders, and everybody's having those, you know, the American flags that are all black and white with the blue line on it. It's why those things are happening, because they want you to lose the focus away from what they're making these people do. Like,
right. Yeah. And I think that a lot of the people who are doing that, it's having the opposite effect. I think it's reinforcing the fact with some law enforcement officers, not all, some, that no matter what we do, we're kings. We're gods among men. I mean, every time you walk in and you get a discount just for having a shiny badge, you know, and every time that people glorify you and thank you for your service, you start to think you're somehow special and you start to think you're somehow above everyone else. And that it just exacerbates the situation.
Yeah. But at the same time, though, you also have places that are now being much more brazen in their disrespect towards those people.
Right.
Which, you know,
and this is this Miami thing is definitely going to make it worse, because here's the difference. You know, when you had certain communities affected, you know, when this was going on in Ferguson and stuff like that.
When it was in black neighborhoods.
When it was in black neighborhoods, exactly. This right here, anyone, and I don't care if you're a one percenter, you can picture yourself stuck at that intersection in that situation.
Oh, yeah.
So all of a sudden, it takes it from a, you know, that's in the ghetto. Oh, that's in the black neighborhoods. Oh, that's in, Beantown or whatever. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. That's only happening on the south side. Now, all of a sudden, it's happening where anybody could be at any time. And that's going to make the difference.
Well, maybe we should have thought about it more when it was going on in the black neighborhoods too. By the way,
well, we were. I mean, I was bitching about.
Oh yeah, no, we were. But I mean, it wasn't getting mainstream media coverage. It wasn't getting coverage from a lot of places.
Well, this is even those situations where it always infuriate me. Like, you know, black guy running away, getting shot in the back, you know, for shoplifting.
Oh, yeah.
Just something like that. Or, you know, like a case.
One in the car that was on video.
Yeah. Like, oh, yeah, get your license. The guy reaches in the car to get his license. He gets shot.
Yeah, killed him.
Well, I thought he was reaching for something. You told him to get his license.
Yeah, he was reaching for something.
So those are horrible and egregious. But when it's intentionally killing a hostage, and when I say intentionally, I'm not saying they aimed at the hostage, but I'm saying that there's no way that a rational person can think you can fire multiple rounds into a vehicle occupied by a hostage and that they will survive.
Well, and it seems like that the ones that the media does tend to want to point out, though, end up being that, because there are times that police have been accused of wrongdoing where it ends up coming out that they didn't actually do anything wrong, where it wasn't,
right.
You know, like, I forget the name of the one, but there was one where the guy actually attacked the cop, and the cop in self-defense killed him.
Oh, the one where the guy's coming at him with a knife repeatedly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I saw that the other day, because I watched the video, and I'm like, oh, God, another cop. I don't know if I can handle this. And I watched it, and I said, oh, well, finally, it's like when you see a police shooting video, and it's justified, you're like, oh, wow, that an actual justified. Well, that I congratulate the cop, because in that case, the cop warned him multiple times. I mean,
yeah.
I would have fired sooner.
Yeah, exactly.
That cop had more restraint than I did. But the thing is that you see a video like that these days, and it's like, that's the exception. And that should be the rule. Police should be held to a way higher standard.
Well, and I do think you have, the funny thing is I do think that you do have some cops within the system right now that recognize this, that are trying to put a better face on it.
But they can't. Because it's the culture.
Well, because here's the thing. Well, they end up resigning.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
The good cops get run out.
The good cops get run out, because if they're not going to be the glorified revenue generator,
right,
then you're out of there.
Right.
Like, if you, and again, I can't wait to have Beza on to talk about this part, but if you read the article, what Beza was doing, some of you is like, well, don't they do that now?
Right.
And they don't. Like, there's simple things that Beza was doing as a cop that he was taking off the streets 2 to 3 criminals.
Like real criminals.
Like, they have a warrants out there for their arrest.
For violence, for property violence. Crimes.
Yeah. And again, he's a libertarian cop, so he only wants to go after people that infringe on the rights of someone else. But he was catching 2 to 3 a night in his extra time.
Right.
Like, and they ended up.
So instead of setting up a speed trap, he was actually going out and catching and bringing in violent criminals. He had like the highest felony arrest record in the department.
Yeah.
You know?
And, you know, and again, we'll let Beza tell the rest
right,
of the story.
Right. Yeah. We got to get him.
But
in
I
here,
will
but
say this, though. Like, if you listen, it's like, why aren't you doing more of this? That's why I really do think I would love to see like a real honest to God libertarian run as a sheriff. But I think that they should run as a real kind of law and like you should run on like real law and order. Like I'm going to go out there and I'm going to if somebody steals or somebody rapes or somebody robs or somebody does this, we are going to use the fullest extent of the law to go and get you. Right.
Right.
And just run that way. Right. And then when you get into office, do that.
But only for violent property crimes.
But only for that.
Nobody, unless you like damage property or cause an accident, you're not getting a ticket.
Like sell the drug mules or the drug dogs. Like you know, get rid of all this other stuff, and literally just put everybody back in squad cars. There's no more SWAT. There's no nothing. You just go out there, and all you do is go after victim crimes, and you have like the highest. Like just do that. And don't get me wrong. Look. One of the reasons they don't do that is because, like, the amount of money that they're getting is a lot off of all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And so their departments are living off of that stuff. But still think, though,
it's part of their budget.
But if you got rid of all those, if all you did was go after the victim crimes, you wouldn't need that many cops.
Yeah.
Like, not as many as you have.
Yeah, exactly.
So
exactly.
I really
would. Well, you know what I'd like to see? I would like us to say, take the entire U.S. military. And the entire U.S. law enforcement population and switch them. You take the U.S. military, you put them on the street in cop cars, and you take all the cops and send them over to, you know, the sandbox. I think that would work great.
Okay, hold on. Let me see if I can figure this one out, though. Why would you do this again?
Because soldiers have much more restraint, much better decision-making capabilities, and they're not going to fuck with anyone over stupid shit.
Okay. All right. Well, maybe. Okay. Well, okay.
Yeah.
As long as you get them. Here's the thing, though. Like, they're bringing in a lot of ex-military people into police force now.
No. I'm saying all of them, though. So you clean house completely across the board. And you bring the guys in with the military mentality to be cops. And I guarantee you, it'll be a world of difference.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Because that's what you see. If you talk to anyone who's been deployed in the past decade or two, you'll find out that their rules of engagement are so much greater. And literally they, in a lot of cases, respect, you know, potential combatants' individual inalienable rights more than U.S. law enforcement respects ours.
Well, no, it really is becoming a problem. And the thing is this, like part of me actually feels bad for those cops that are there that are trying to do the right thing.
Exactly. Because I know a lot of these guys.
Because I know that eventually, though, they're either going to get beat down to the point where they quit, or they're going to get beat down to the point where they're going to just be they're going to believe the lies that they're being told. You know, and well, here's the thing too, like if you're told all the time that the civilian population hates you, and when you go out there, the civilians treat you badly, then you do think that they hate you, but you don't understand, and they're telling you...
There's a reason for that.
Yeah, there's an actual reason instead of the crap reason that they're giving you.
Right. It's not because, oh, yeah, everyone out there is bad. It's because you're doing bad things that are pissing us off.
Yeah, because
and we realize that you're a tax collector.
Well, that's what you turned into.
Right.
Not by choice, but here's the thing, though. If you don't do that...
You get fired.
Then you get fired, or you resign.
And everybody says, oh, there's no quotas. Bullshit, bullshit, bullshit. Everybody knows there's quotas.
There's absolutely
because
quotas.
Because if you don't write enough tickets, you get fired.
Yeah.
By definition.
It may not be a written down thing.
Right. But that is the definition of a quota. If you don't do this, you know, enough of this.
And it doesn't matter if you arrest hardened criminals.
Yeah,
like, that doesn't matter.
Completely irrelevant.
You don't write enough tickets, you go to jail. Well, I mean, you write a ticket, you get fired.
Yeah.
Probably could go to jail, too. You never know.
Yeah.
Well, you ain't going to go to jail for shooting somebody.
No, you do get fired. You just get hired with the next department over, you know.
Well, okay. So not only is that a problem, but in Virginia, the prison guards strip search an 8-year-old girl. And I say strip search all the way down to go to visit her father. Here's the thing. So this woman by the name of Diamond Pierman drove 2.5 hours Sunday before Thanksgiving to take her boyfriend's 8-year-old daughter to visit him at a state prison in Virginia. So a drug-sniffing dog fixated on the pair, and a Buckingham Correctional Center guard told them that they had to submit to a strip search or else they would be banned from the prison. So this little 8-year-old girl would be banned from seeing her father. Pierman, she told the Washington Post, the girl balked at the idea of removing her clothes in front of the uniform officers or uniform strangers. I told her that it means you have to take off all your clothes or you're not going to be able to see your dad, Pierman told the Virginia Pilot, which first reported the strip search on Thursday. That's when she started to cry. So the incident, you know, rang alarm bells to the girl's mother, civil rights advocates, and a Virginia Department of Corrections official who said that the decision to strip search the girl without her legal guardian's permission defied its internal policy. So even, like, they have an internal policy, but they weren't even doing that. They had, and she had to take all of her clothes off. An 8-year-old girl had to strip down in order to see her dad.
What do you think that girl's going to think of cops for the rest of her life?
I got to tell you, I think the opinion's going to be pretty low.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's going to be really low.
See, that's the difference. And again, I don't know if I'm being weirdly nostalgic here, but, you know, growing up, I had a lot of run-ins with cops. But having said that, it was always, there was a respect there. Nothing ever was like too drastic. They let me off on things that, you know, in reality today, I would have gone to jail for multiple times. You know, it was just different. There was more like, things were in the right proportion, it seems like, in decades past. Things are so out of proportion these days.
Well, here's the thing. In decades past, cops were still doing this. They were just doing it in different neighborhoods.
Yeah, that is true. That is true.
That's the thing. Is like this is one of those things in which when they talk about, like, if you listen to like some of Dave Chappelle or something like that, where they'll talk about how it's not now police brutality is a problem because it's in the white neighborhoods.
Yeah,
when it was in the black neighborhoods, it wasn't a problem.
You know,
in all reality, it was in the poor neighborhoods.
Poor. It's exactly it
poor, and because even in Pasco, like, it's poor neighborhoods, like,
predominantly white, but
predominantly
poor.
Well, yeah, I mean, not as much anymore. The hoods in Pasco have become much more of a diversified group. So yeah. Let's just say it that way. But the thing is that it really is a problem that we need to address and we need to solve, because this is still only the beginning of the problem.
Right.
It really is going to continue to get worse and worse and worse as the economic condition deteriorates, as they put more and more laws in the books, and when they apply more pressure to the police forces to go out there and enforce these laws. It is a recipe for disaster.
Oh, it totally is. And it is law enforcement that I believe is driving it. You know what I'm saying? Because crime rates are lower than they were 2, 3, 4 decades ago. I mean, crime rates in the 70s and 80s were way higher. Property crime rates, murder rates, it's all less now today. So if anything, cops are safer than they have been, you know, for, you know, 60 years. But are we over?
No, we're not over yet.
Oh, okay.
We're at 47.
Oh, okay. You looked at the time and went, shit.
Well, but we spent that much time on this one subject.
Well, we knew we were going to.
No,
but,
I know.
But the point is that, you know, if anything, cops are safer today than they've ever been, and they're treating it like, you know, every time they walk out the front door, they're going to die.
Oh, yeah. No.
If they were to scale back on that and start treating the people with respect, they would get it back.
Yeah, I mean.
And if they were only actually going after the real criminals, they would also get a lot of that respect back.
Well, and I do wish that we would have more people that would run. Like, if there was one area that we should have maybe focused on more for sheriff, or it would have been for sheriff. I really do.
Well, no, we did
regret,
that for a long time.
We never found anybody good that was running for sheriff, though. Like,
yeah,
we never
we tried.
Really found, you know, like, there was some, anybody that was a sheriff's candidate was crazy. Like, it was almost like insane.
Yeah.
People.
Yeah,
like,
that
Greg
is
Pound
true.
Was a damn sheriff's candidate.
Yeah, that guy's just a nut job.
It was normally somebody that ran, and again, if we have Beza, and if Beza ever decides that he doesn't want to run for sheriff,
oh god,
like, I'll get back, I'll get involved to deal with.
I might jump in the game to get Beza elected.
I gotta tell you, I'd like to see him. I'd like to see him run in Hernando. Actually, I mean, he's not going to do it this cycle for sure, but, like, you know, the next, it'd be 4 years after this cycle. But I would love to see, because I'd love to see it run. Even I want to say honestly, because I think if you went and looked at the numbers on the inside, and if you tried to explain to the general population exactly what the problem is, and use the sheriff's campaign as that,
right?
I think that you could really, like, I think that people perceive what the police are supposed to do. The difference between how they perceive it and what reality is would be shocking.
Yeah.
But anybody that's had any involvement or run-in with the police will totally know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You know, with my incident with you know, with, again, it finally got all ejected and all that stuff. But, like, I got to tell you, I mean, I don't really put it on the sheriff's back on this one. But the thing is this, I shouldn't have been arrested.
Right.
Like, I just shouldn't have been arrested at the end of the day.
Yeah, there was
and if
no
that was the
for
mentality
that.
For me to be arrested, like, you guys screwed this one up. You know, like, it didn't work out the right way. It didn't really, but at any rate. The other thing I wanted to make sure that we brought up, though, was the obvious war that Saudi Arabia has on America, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. Like,
I mean, there's three incidents that happened at military bases this week.
Yeah, but I don't think they were related.
No. None of them were related.
Okay.
But there's just been four instances. One was a bomb threat in Patrick.
Right.
You had the one up in Pensacola.
Right.
And then one in Hawaii.
Yeah. Well, that was actually a disgruntled soldier.
Yeah.
You know, he was actually facing disciplinary action, and you know, I mean, it's tragic, but it had nothing to do with terrorism. But the one at the Pensacola Naval Air Station that happened this week, which resulted in three people being killed and the shooter killing himself, is appearing more and more to be an organized, event by actual Saudi military personnel.
Yeah.
What you have is you have a whole bunch. And you know what? Didn't we learn that we probably shouldn't teach Saudis how to fly airplanes?
You'd think, right?
Like, I mean,
you'd think.
These were Saudi Air Force personnel here in the U.S. To learn to go to a flight school. They were in flight school at the Pensacola Naval Air Station. And one of them decided to go on a shooting spree, and three of them recorded the incident.
Yeah.
Instead of trying to stop him and instead of trying to intervene in any way, they recorded it. And right now, apparently six Saudi military personnel are under investigation, being held for questioning.
Yeah, so. Yeah, exactly. And here's the other thing, too, by the way. When Tulsi Gabbard called Donald Trump Saudi Arabia's bitch.
He is.
Let me give you exhibit A as to why. Again, this... You know what? This really pisses me off. Out of all the things that this guy could say at this time to do this, this is one of his tweets. King Salman of Saudi Arabia just called to express his sincere condolences and to give sympathies to the families and friends of the warriors who were killed and wounded in the attack that took place in Pensacola, Florida. The king said that the Saudi people are greatly angered by the barbaric actions of the shooter and that the person in no way, shape, or form represents the feelings of the Saudi people who love the American people. You know what, dude? That is the definition of being Saudi Arabia's bitch.
Yeah.
When he called you and then you tweet what he said, like, here's the thing. How about you? Why can't you fly off the handle and declare war on Saudi Arabia for them killing our people? Like, what is wrong with you, Trump? What the hell is wrong with you? I can't even fathom why you think it was a good idea for you to be so transparent in being Saudi Arabia's bitch. Like, this... Like, what the hell is going on here? Like, these people, how about you say, let's kick all the Saudi Arabians out of the country? Like, what, you can't do that now? Like, I can't fathom why you thought that was a good idea to put that, other than it really does make you look like Saudi Arabia's bitch.
Well,
like, it really does.
I don't think we should endorse kicking all the Saudis out of
the U.S. I don't think we should either, but, like, what the hell, Trump?
America has been Saudi Arabia's bitch for decades. I mean, shit, Saudi Arabia attacked us on 9/11. It was an act of war, and it was without question, according to the now-released 28 missing pages of the 9/11 Commission report, it was clearly... a Saudi government operation. Now, did every part of the Saudi government know about it? Maybe, maybe not. We don't know. But if we were being honest with ourselves, Afghanistan had nothing to do with 9/11. Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11. Saudi Arabia did 9/11. And they have been playing us since day one. So, you know, hey, and we keep going along with it. I mean, Bush went along with it. Obama went along with it. Trump's going along with it. I mean, it just, you know, we are Saudi Arabia's bitch. Why? I guess because they have oil.
That's the thing. Like, I really don't understand. Like, why are we going? Like, why aren't we holding these people accountable?
Right.
Like, if you want to be a neocon scumbag, then be a neocon scumbag to the right people.
Yeah.
Like, you're not being, like, why is in some aspect.
Why was John McCain not singing bomb, 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 Riyadh?
Yeah.
You know?
Like, why? Yeah, exactly. Like, why? What? Do they have naked pictures of all you people or something? Like, what the hell is it?
I never
with
understood
Saudi
that.
Arabia.
Yeah.
That you just ignore blatant things that we. Why are we training their people to do anything? Why are we giving them anything?
Right.
Just cut ties. Cut the freaking ties already, all right? I don't understand why we just can't cut the ties with Saudi Arabia. This is pathetic. They're on our bases shooting our people. At this, I mean, we can't declare war for this. Like, how about that be a bill going to Congress right now?
That
would shut them up.
We should have, basically wiped out the Saud royal family on September 12, 2001. We knew who did it. And we covered it up. Congress covered it up from the American people. It took 15 years.
And trillions of dollars.
Yeah. Yeah. Before we actually released the missing 28 pages that proved the Saudi government was involved and was backing and paying for and supplying the, 19 hijackers, whom 18 were Saudi Arabian.
Yeah. Let's just stop training Saudis how to fly planes.
Well, that's a start.
Like, that's a good start. Like, yeah. Just do that to begin with. I mean, and again, just to see Trump just so laid down for these people.
And we're
as much of a tough guy as this guy is. He's such a pussy at the same time.
And the amazing part is we're like, we're defending Saudi Arabia. We're fighting proxy wars for Saudi Arabia. We're defending them against Iran. I mean, if you want some justice, let's get the hell out of there and say, hey, Iran, do us a favor. Kick the shit out of Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
You know?
Maybe we're backing the wrong people in this place.
We totally are. Well, we shouldn't be backing anyone.
Well, that's true, too.
But, you know, we ought to be sitting on the sidelines watching popcorn as Iran fucking kicks the shit out of Saudi Arabia. But, you know, we keep selling them. That's the other thing. It's not just the oil.
It's the armaments. They buy
a whole lot of shit from Boeing and Lockheed Martin and United Defense and Raytheon and so on and so forth.
No, that's the problem.
You know, it's billions of dollars in that. So.
Well, and the other thing is that... So... If you've ever been on a military base, you will understand that you cannot have a weapon on a military base. It sounds funny.
Right.
But, like, you can't have a weapon on a military base. So if somebody does have a weapon and starts shooting people...
There's no defense.
There is not... I mean, eventually somebody with a gun will be there.
You know, I bet a lot of people who have never served in the military don't actually realize that it's... You're more likely to have a gun in a school than you are on a military base.
Yeah.
I mean, until recently... You weren't even allowed to have a gun in your car on a military base.
That's true.
And the armament, oh my God, checking out a rifle from the armory and ammo. I mean, you can check out a rifle pretty easy, but getting a hold of ammo? When you arrive at the range, right before you load a magazine, we will let you touch ammo.
Yeah.
I mean, it's ridiculous that how disarmed our soldiers are on U.S. bases.
So, yeah, now there are because there was two active shooters in 1 week on military bases. And again, if you want to talk about how gun control, and again, this is an article that was on NBC News. So I always find it to be funny that they were talking about how, like, well, you know, the reason there isn't so many shootings on a military base is because there's a complete ban on weapons. Yeah, but if they do shoot somebody, they can shoot as many as they want. Like in Fort Hood, Texas, they killed 13 and injured 32.
Wait a second. Somebody said... That the reason there aren't more shootings on military bases is because they don't allow guns?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. The NBC article said that.
Anyone with a rational mind at all realizes that it's the exact opposite.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I know. No, I know. It's just... But now they are looking at it.
Why are there never shootings at gun shows?
Yeah.
You know? There's guns and ammo everywhere there.
Yeah. Now, President Trump, Saudi's bitch, said in January 2016 that on his first day of office, he would get rid of gun-free schools zones on schools and military bases. Another promise he did not keep, by the way.
Oh, yeah. He lied about
amongst,
that, too.
Amongst the many. God, this guy. You know what? It is weird things that pisses me off about this guy, but this is one of them, though. Like, you didn't do nothing about that, and that's an actual problem. Like, if you look at the Parkland and all these other places... It's because that they're gun-free zones that kids think and people think that they can go there and shoot everybody.
Hang on a second. In Trump's defense...
I can't believe you even said that.
No.
I never thought those three words would come out of your mouth.
In Trump's defense, he needs to use that issue again in 2020.
Ain't that the truth? He couldn't do anything about it. Ain't that the friggin' truth? Ain't that the truth?
Right.
That is totally the... You know, good point, Adrian.
Yeah.
Good friggin' point. But they are going to look at that. So maybe because of this, we may see that maybe that they'll loosen up the rules so people can actually be armed and protect themselves on military bases.
I blame Carter.
You blame Carter?
Yeah.
You're going all the way to Carter with this, huh?
Carter, yeah. Yeah, it's Carter's fault.
But this is
blaming Obama is just not enough. You got to go back to
this. This is absolutely an act of, this is absolutely an act of terrorism, though.
Like, oh, yeah, no doubt.
Perpetrated by people in the Saudi military.
Yeah.
It should be attributed accordingly. And it's not going to be.
No, it's
but,
not.
But, you know, because again,
it's Saudi Arabia. And you
Saudi
know.
Arabia's king called Donald Trump and said that he's really sorry about that.
I don't get this. Well, I do get it, but I don't get. I do and I don't. I don't get why Saudi Arabia has such a stranglehold on American presidents, and because
I can tell you why.
They've had them on all of it. Well, oil and money. Yeah, it's oil
the
and
petrodollar.
The petrodollar.
That's a big part of it.
Yeah, that really is it. Because if Saudi Arabia switched to gold or you know some other currency like that,
yeah.
America would collapse. Yeah, that really. You're right. It is the petrodollar.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe I didn't see that.
Yeah, it's a petrodollar.
It is.
But
and for those of you who don't know, little history lesson. OPEC, who Saudi Arabia is like the head honcho of, many years back agreed only to sell oil in U.S. dollars, and really, oil is the only thing backing the U.S. dollar. If it wasn't for that. Internationally, the dollar, the value of the dollar would pretty much collapse.
Yeah.
So, because, you know, there's nothing else to back it with, but oil at this point. So yeah, you're completely right. If Saudi Arabia were to say, we're only going to sell oil and gold, it's game over for the U.S. Our economy would collapse. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, now we know why.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
More answers. All right, so hour number one in the bag.
In the can,
whatever. Hour number two is going to be coming up here.
What are we going to talk about in hour number two?
All right, so we have Adam Schiff kind of showing why the NSA is such a bad, or why the government having your phone records is really the attack on the free press and not just Trump calling people fake news. Fed playing war games when it comes to the market, dumping $73 billion, $93 billion. Like, they're just dumping money like it's going out of style. Second Amendment fight in the Supreme Court and what has happened because of that. We got Prince Andrew be going quick and disgusting, and more people are coming out to tell that they had sex with him. I was going to ask you if you actually had sex with Prince Andrew to find out that out.
Briefly.
We are going to talk about the interrogation, if you criticize the police in China, and what's coming to America soon enough. We are also going to talk about a leading geneticist says reversing the aging process could be 20 years away in humans. And a female Kentucky judge accused of threesomes in the courthouse, another Me Too movement.
Hang on. You know we're not going to really talk about half of that.
Oh, yeah, you're right. And the 2020 presidential shit show.
These are things that we might talk about. Or, you know, we could just start telling stories or, you know, get sidetracked by knock-knock jokes or something.
We could do that, too.
We're pretty simple. But if you do want to find out what's going to happen in hour number two, please go to patreon.com/unattendedbaggage. Sign up. Be a supporter. This show is made possible by donations from people like you. We support our listeners, and our listeners support us. We're here for you. So, send us some money. You know, as little as $5 a week gets you exclusive content only available to Patreon members, only available to supporters. Go to patreon.com/unattendedbaggage and hook us up, help us out. We'll see you on the other side.
See you on the other side.